Well, if it feels good, it's good. If it feels really, really good, it's probably evil. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good definition.
That is, yeah.
No, you know, evil, a lot of people want to say that, you know, evil, morality, you know, they're subjective. It depends on you, the person, how you perceive it. And I'd just like to say that people who think this way are evil.
Bringing complex ideas down to earth, based on their value, not group identity. This is The Daily Archetype.
Welcome to The Daily Archetype, a value sharing community. Welcome to The Daily Archetype.
Welcome to The Daily Archetype.
The Daily Archetype.
A value sharing community.
If you want someone to remain ignorant, just make sure they think in groups of identity rather than groups of values. Let's promote understanding, not ignorance.
This is The Daily Archetype.
The Daily Archetype.
What's up, archetypal friends? This is a fun and special episode on the deep dark shadow. That is the Jungian archetype of the shadow, collective and personal. I hope this turned out well. It was a little difficult to record when I did a few weeks ago when I was with Dr. Lahab and Karen up in Seattle working on their Zoom conference. There were some issues with the neighbors redoing their floors, so hopefully it sounds okay. It was a little distracting. And of course, I was able to land the infamous, everyone's favorite comedian philosopher, Roddy Norman, or Leonard Nechumsky. And as you'll hear, this was shortly before the presidential election, so we got to hear a little bit about his message as future president. And I actually voted for him. I think if we recount the votes enough, he's actually going to win somehow. Or there was enough corruption by Biden and Trump that he's probably going to be our next president here next month. But in all seriousness, this is a really cool one about the shadow. I just had him open up for a few minutes at the beginning because it's a dark, serious issue. Now, also, pretty please, with Cherries and Sugar, share on social media, support any way you possibly can. I'm really trying to put together a powerful, life-changing community here. And as always, check out the show notes. I did a long personality examination with the blind ENFJ typologist. So I'll leave that in the show notes if anybody wants to get in the nitty-gritty of why I am what personality type. Also keep an eye on that for other media coming up. And this one I originally did with some visual aid type things. So I will leave the link to the YouTube video. But for the most part, you don't necessarily need those. Now, please enjoy the episode.
Welcome to The Daily Archetype, a value-sharing community.
I'm here with Isaac Miller. Hi, Isaac.
Hi.
Isaac is the founder of The Daily Archetype, and I'm going to just introduce you to everyone so can get to know you a little bit better. In the early 2000s, Isaac was trained as a Pentecostal preacher. You didn't tell me that.
No, I know.
And after that, spiritual side was taken to the extreme. He mostly departed that path and became a successful financial services entrepreneur. Eventually, the materialistic path was taken to the extreme. In 2017, before he knew what he was doing, Isaac decided to unite the opposites, spirit and matter. Since then, he has been on a relentless self-study to find the truth and help others do the same. He studies the work of Carl Jung and others. He's having trouble finding a place for those new to the archetypal journal, or he was, to come together. So in 2019, he started the Daily Archetype Group. And since then, it has expanded to several other media platforms with thousands of members, is now a fast-growing weekly podcast. He aims to continue to bring people from all walks of life to find themselves on the archetypal journey. Welcome, Isaac.
Thank you for that warm introduction and everything else. This is a conference about confronting our dark side and things like that. But I wanted to start off on a little bit of a lighter note For those of you who don't know, I have a very special surprise guest, Rodney Norman or Leonard Nechumsky. I'll let you get to know him a little bit here. Yeah, I'm just going to ask him a few questions. He'll just be on for a few minutes and then I'll go into a little longer presentation. We're going to get to know him as a philosopher, and he does mix in some humor with it just so people aren't taken too off guard. So he's a philosopher, and also we may talk a little bit about his bid for the United States presidency. Rodney, I think you're with us. We're gonna bring you on.
Hello.
Oh,
hey, how's it going?
Should I call you Leonard? Actually,
so Leonard works. McCrunsky.
Okay.
Or Leonard McCrunsky. Some people say Leo. Okay. Some people say you.
Hey, you.
Mr. McCrunsky. Mr. Leonard McCrunsky, Mr. Leo McCrunsky.
Sounds good.
I think I got them all.
That's a good list. We're actually having a conference right now, so I know you're a philosopher. That's why I wanted to try to get you on at least for a couple minutes and ask, what is evil and how does evil differ from good? How can we tell the difference?
Well, if it feels good, it's good. If it feels really, really good, it's probably evil. I mean, that's a pretty good definition.
That is,
No, you know, a lot of people want to say that, you know, evil and morality, you know, they're subjective. Depends on you, the person, how you perceive it. And I'd just like to say that people who think this way are evil.
Kind of the follow-up question is, once we know what evil is, how do we decide who evil people are or if we ourselves are evil?
Well, trying to determine who's all evil and who's not evil. Well, first of all, we're all evil. We all got some evil in us. And it's just to what degree that we're entertaining evil is the issue. You know, how much darkness are you letting out, and how much lightness you're letting out determines on your evil.
Right.
Not to be confused, of course, with Evel Knievel. He spelled it wrong.
Oh, did he spell it wrong?
He did some evil stuff, but then, you know, he wasn't the best. He's kind of an ornery sort. But anyway.
Wow, I appreciate you having an Evel Knievel thing on short notice.
With me all times.
Oh, okay. How can we overcome evil and the darkness?
You know,
lock screen window.
A lock
screen pane. Flick up to move to new notification from mail.
Rodney, what did I just do?
Reminder.
I don't know what happened there. Okay, so the way
computer has an evil spirit in it.
Yeah. I didn't know this thing works.
October 18th, 2020.
What's going on?
That evil computer has a lot to tell you.
See, that's evil. Evil's always trying to stop light. So obviously, I'm going to say is profound.
Right.
No, the way we avoid the evils, well, a lot of it is just when we surrender the ego, when we surrender ourselves, when we stop our desires, because it's our desires are what leads us towards doing evil stuff.
Right.
You're always trying to get stuff from other people, and you're forcing your will on other people, and that's the evil. So if you stop doing that, well, then you stop being evil.
Mm.
And then you start enjoying, herbal teas and sage more often.
That's a good introduction, especially for this conference. And I want to talk just for a couple minutes about your very important message of hope and overcoming things, because the election's only in a couple weeks and you're running for president. Or if you could just tell us more about your presidential campaign and how that's going.
It's going great. You have to write me in because I'm not what you call a self-starter. So, you know, you're really got to be, that's what I say. People who want me to be president really want me to be president because they go the extra mile to not only remember who I am, but actually write my name.
Right. Spell it all the way out. Yeah.
That's right. But our first and most important thing is we want to legalize all the marijuanas.
Okay.
Mostly, mostly just to get all the people that like marijuana to shut up.
Right. That's a good plan. And that's got to be part of overcoming evil, too, or overcoming the darkness, is if everybody will just have some marijuana, then that might help them, or at least some people.
Whatever, as long as you're not stealing it from somebody.
Yeah, stealing can be evil and dark.
Unless, of course, you're stealing it from a drug dealer who's an evil person, and I think we're getting into a bit of a moral quandary right there.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. You get what I'm saying. Mostly, I want to run for president because I need a job.
Oh yeah.
I could use the cash flow.
Yeah.
All these other people running for president, they got platforms, they got things they want to accomplish.
You just need a job.
I just want to be able to cover my cable bill. That's it.
How are you going to overcome the darkness and evil as president?
Well, you know, there's a lot of darkness floating around in Washington.
And
the way you combat evil is you just don't participate. Mm. You know, the contention, that's the thing people don't realize. Contention, that's an evil spirit right there. Mm. It's evil when you contend. Now, that's not saying you don't stand up for what's right, but just being contentious, be contentious. I'm not into contention. So, you know, I'll listen to people, hear what they have to say. Sometimes the best way to stop doing something is just keep listening to someone, keep them talking, because when they keep yapping and talking, then they're not doing anything else, and then you keep them from doing stupid stuff.
Yeah, so like I said, we just want to have you on for a few minutes and get that introduction to you. Do you want to tell people how they can find you before we let you go here in just a minute?
Rodney Norman, comedian. It's the other fellow. Yeah. And I get all my mail through that guy. Mm. So just type that in, and I'll pop up. It's everywhere.
Everywhere on the Google and the Facebook and all those things. All right.
Yeah.
All right, Rodney. Well, again, we appreciate having you with us, and we can't wait until you're a new president in a couple of weeks.
Hell the chief.
All right. Hell the chief. Hell the
Thank
chief.
You.
Thank you, Rodney.
Pleasure.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. So that was Rodney, and I wanted to bring him on for a little bit before my presentation, because we've been talking about such dark things, and sometimes laughter is good medicine for the soul. So I thought that would be a good help and an intro for a few minutes. I'm going to do a little presentation on the theme of this little Zoom conference we're doing, which is about facing the shadow, or sort of facing our darkness or our darkness in the world. And this is a Jungian conference, so I'll have a few Carl Jung quotes. And this brings to mind the aspect of how sometimes we overthink and we'll even over into it because we want to repress the feeling side or the sensing side, because that's our side that can feel hurt. So Carl Jung said, emotions are the center source of all becoming consciousness. There can be no transforming of darkness into light and apathy into movement without emotion. So that's, I think, sometimes why the Jungian themes have to fit inside of stories, is because they are very hard to understand just in a very straightforward textbook kind of way. This is from a little quote from Edward Edinger. He was a big-time Jungian analyst in the 20th century, kind of picked up the torch for a while. But he said, confronting the shadow means to stop blaming others. It's almost like a stoic thing in that we can only change ourselves. And as we change ourselves, we change the world. This is a little thing. I actually got it from Instagram. But what I try to do really is I try to put together like these kind of concepts for dummies or for anybody, like Jungian analysis or whatever, depth psychology for dummies. So this really helps. Step one to accepting your shadow is to, well, accept it, make friends with it. You need to explore it through meditation, through feeling your feelings. Journaling helps. You know, don't just forget your dreams. Write them down if you can, or record them somehow. And then you want to have compassion on yourself and compassion on those, on others, especially relationships that you may have been projecting shadow onto. You also want to find your inner child and nurture it. So the little cartoon says, I love you and I'm here for you. And this is kind of the idea or a concept, the way this is drawn out in this little fun cartoon of active imagination. So Carl Jung would, rather than just talking to himself or rather than just writing things down, he would project out and converse with fantasy characters. And that was the birth of the Red Book, which then became, and that was sort of like his own personal alchemy before he even really discovered alchemy. And that sprung up everything else that really became Jungian psychology. And so then I guess the final step would be to believe that you are good and you're worthy. I brought up this too, just because it kind of reminded me of the JAMP method that you've been hearing a lot about, which, you know, you've got to often confront your dark side or your trauma or your bad memories with affirmation and good thoughts. This is another little quote: to confront a person with a shadow is to show him his own light, which I think that's sort of like the often misunderstood thing is it's shadow because we've repressed it. But if we confront it, we realize it's not a horrible thing. I was actually talking to Karen the other day. We were talking about freedom. And the best and most important freedom that we often forget about is the inner freedom that comes from being able to take control of ourselves, take control of our lives, take control of our emotion and our trauma and everything else. That's why it's important to remember people like Viktor Frankl, who's got this quote here, "He who would give light must endure burning," who was a Holocaust survivor, and he survived the Holocaust, not just by chance, but he really memorized the manuscript for his book, Man's Search for Meaning, while he was going through the concentration camp experience. A little quote from Carl Jung: good does not become better by being exaggerated, but worse. And a small evil becomes a big one through being disregarded and repressed. The shadow is very much a part of human nature, and it is only at night there are no shadows. It's a lot about confronting our dark side for just what it is. Carl Jung also said that the shadow is a tight passage or narrow door whose painful construction no one is spared, who goes down to the deep well. That's something important to remember too when confronting a person's dark side, either in yourself or your relationships, is that it's a painful thing and it's not going to be easy. Just like they're talking about with, you know, even the JAMP method, you can only go down for so long. If you're not careful, that side will want to take over, which is actually one reason why I put up this movie that some of you may or may not know. Or sometimes if we're not careful and we don't deal with it, it's almost like the dragon that becomes bigger, or in the case of certain characters like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, or Tyler Durden in modern movie Fight Club, the alter ego and the shadow side can take over. Now, I brought up this alchemical image of sort of the...
Why don't you do the Brad Pitt part, what he says? I think he's
very Okay. I'm going to go back because Dr. Lahab, who's here with me, he mentioned an important part of this. So this is sort of how that the alter ego took over in this movie Fight Club, which is an important book and movie of the late 20th century as we started to explore our shadow more in art and literature. So in this little clip toward the end, which is sort of a spoiler, but it's a 20 plus year old movie anyway, but he says, "In all the ways you wish you could be, that's me. I look like you want to look," and he's Brad Pitt. So he says that, "and I fuck like you want to fuck. I'm smart, I'm capable, and most importantly, I'm free in all the ways you are not." And actually that freedom part is really important because we repress all these things often, and like, we're not worthy to feel a certain way. We're not worthy to talk to certain people. We're not worthy to have certain conversations. We have to be quiet. And then that side of us will usually get repressed, and that will cause sort of like that alter ego dragon shadow side that if we don't pay attention to it, it can take over if we're not careful.
It's a very eloquent way to define shadow.
Yes, yes. It's
don't you think?
Through yes, it's a modern movies. Chuck Palahniuk, who wrote that book, he did a very good job of outlining the way that it manifests today, because the way that it's manifest in modern and postmodern times is going to be very different than how it manifests in 100 years ago or 200 or 300 years ago. And that movie and some others that came out about that time do a very good job of exploring that. Now, one thing I want to talk about too a little bit is how, and this is often where it gets a little confusing, but I think it can start to make sense, is that the shadow has levels that I'll talk about more in a minute. It always plays out like a soap opera or a drama. And I have an alchemical image here, which is sort of the unified world parents. And if they're unified properly, then they could be the good archetype. But if they're not unified properly, they can become the devouring. So the levels of the shadow, you're going to always deal with it on a personal level. And then it's important to realize that contrasexual aspect of it, that means some repressed sides that may be masculine or feminine, and those may differ depending on how masculine or feminine you might normally act in your persona that you may or may not be conscious of. And then I say it acts out on these different levels because mainly you'll see it in your close relationships, or you may not see it, but your partner will see it, or those around you will see it projecting on your close relationships, especially if you have a close romantic relationship, especially longer term ones. And then ultimately it'll get projected into collective society. We'll get into more of that for a bit here in a second, but the tricky thing about the collective society projections is projecting out, and that it's like throwing it away because there's little that we can do in those projections. Where on the other hand, if we focus on ourselves and focus on our immediate relationships, like our partners and our family and those around us, then we can start to transform the world on the level that we actually have control over. This is actually sort of a mandala thing that I had been working on for about 3 years. But although it all came out at once, but it had to do with this concept of conflict and conflict resolution. As I was sort of going down my own path of starting to get into this type of work, this type of literature, which is basically the way that it came together, was the idea of who we are or who an individual is, then who other people are, and then to what degree that we can or should focus on who's right or wrong, to what degree that might change, or there's a lot more to it. But I only bring this up briefly because before I knew what it was years ago, before I heard about Carl Jung or anything, it would kind of come to me in images as I was kind of going through my own sort of transformative experience. Carl Jung talks a lot about how people will, at those sort of night sea journey period of life, especially have these sort of mandala images. And I was trying to make sense of it, but depending on how it's drawn out, it's also a symbol of the unification of the self. It usually drawn out more of one circle around it, but it'll have to do with a square and circles, or circles within squares. And it'll usually more often have to deal with dividing into four. So like a quaternity, but we don't have time to get all into that. I bring this up quickly because I haven't met anyone else who found Carl Jung the way that I did, but I was reading another book called The Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene. And this was when I was just on my own personal journey, trying to find answers and looking different ways and different places that I'd never looked before. So I got my hands on this book that just came out now exactly almost 2 years ago. And I say he's not exactly Jungian, but he has a few Jungian chapters within this book. He makes a couple points. He talks about Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, which is kind of like the ultimate shadow character in literature, especially the modern era. It's very much similar to like Tyler Durden of Fight Club. He makes a good point that I always highlighted early on in the shadow chapter of The Laws of Human Nature. The solution is not more repression or correctness. We must never alter human nature through enforced niceness. The pitchfork doesn't work, nor is the solution to seek release of our shadow in the group, which is volatile and dangerous. Through such self-knowledge, we can find a way to integrate the dark side into our consciousness productively and creatively, exploring to the maximum the energies we naturally possess. One reason too I wanted to mention Robert Greene is because he had a lot of interviews about this chapter especially, and I wanted to bring up this point because there's been a lot of questions during this conference about this type of thing. And one of the things that he does really well that he realized as he sort of has learned to deal with his own shadow, because people ask Robert Greene, who I recommend everybody at least read that book of his, he puts his anger into his writing. And so that's really important if if anybody has any creative work, even if it's just a hobby or painting, pottery, any form of writing, put your anger into it in a productive way. Otherwise, it can like go into Facebook in unproductive ways and all these other things that you don't want to go into, or come out in conversations where maybe we'd almost call it a Freudian slip, but really it'd be more like Facebook shadow slip or something along those lines. This was actually a Facebook post that I made, but I just want to mention this, how that the way to integrate the darkness, and why I call my group the Daily Archetype, by the way, there's a lot of reasons, but mainly it has to do with the idea of renewing or renewal, especially renewal of light and consciousness, but that darkness is also always part of it, and that there's a renewing aspect to it. And so we all need to accept that light and dark constant renewal aspect. So the only way to overcome the darkness is to accept it in some way, but also it has to do with what they call in the East, ego death, which is a little bit strange for us in the West, because in the West, we talk about having a strong ego. So I think of it sort of like to unite those is that you, and it's almost like a Christian idea too, of the repentance idea, which is the same thing, sort of slay the ego and then it comes back stronger, but transformed. And that's the overcoming the ego process. We need to know our capacity for evil. And the reason I mention this quote here by Bacon, a lot of people, when you get into shadow work type of things, and even when I would start reading Robert Greene, who would kind of talk about some of these dark side things, people often don't like to talk about that stuff, or they just want to ignore it and just be like, oh no, positivity. They just want to like avoid anything negative and avoid darkness, avoid all that stuff. And also I mentioned that because Robert Greene's books are often called Machiavellian, and he was largely inspired by Niccolo Machiavelli, which is really important because that's basically understanding the shadow side of culture. Machiavelli was probably the first one who really wrote about how to be deceptive in politics and business and everything else. So a lot of people will be like, oh, you're a horrible person if you read those kind of books. And the reason I bring up this quote by Francis Bacon, who was right after the times of Machiavelli, he said, "We are much beholden to Machiavelli and others that write what men do and not what they ought to do. For it is not possible to join serpentine wisdom with the Columbine innocency, except men know exactly the conditions of the serpent. His baseness is going upon his belly, his volatility and lubricancy, his envy, his sting, and the rest. That is all forms of the nature of evil. For without this, virtue lieth open and unfenced. Nay, an honest man can do no good upon those that are wicked to reclaim them without help from the knowledge of evil." One of the most important works we need to read or hear over and over again, I actually put it on the Daily Archetype podcast a couple weeks ago, because it's only about 2 hours of reading. It's a short work that Carl Jung wrote right at sort of the transition from extreme fascism at the end of World War II to extreme communism, totalitarianism going into the Cold War. That's called The Undiscovered Self. He talks a lot in that, as well as The Collective Works, Volume 10, Civilization and Transition, about just this, that we need to have a knowledge of every human capacity towards evil. And because if we don't understand that, then it sneaks up and we just say, oh, it's just evil's fault, where it's partly our fault for not understanding the capacity for evil and all the ways that it can creep in. And actually, I mentioned this too quickly because this is actually from Oppenheimer, who was part of the Manhattan Project to bring about the atom bomb and everything else. This is actually like an extra sort of excerpt, missing chapter from that book that I mentioned by Robert Greene. But the reason it was important is because in his shadow chapter, he mostly teaches through stories. He tells the story of Watergate and Nixon, show kind of this split personality that he had, one in the public and one on these tapes that came forward later. But I think the Oppenheimer story actually explores it a little bit better. And he was sort of in this chapter exploring the idea of narcissism, because Oppenheimer was one of the smartest persons ever and very narcissistic. That led him partly to create the nuclear bomb that has now led to a lot of our problems that we've been dealing with since then. I mentioned that because people always want to know, okay, once we've realized our dark side, what do we do about it? And after Oppenheimer brought about the nuclear everything, and although if he didn't, I'm sure someone else would, so it's in a way maybe better that he did instead of others, is then he brought up resistance to it. So this quote's a little fuzzy, but it says, we most of all should try to be experts in the worst about ourselves. We should not be astonished to find some evil there that we find so readily around in all others. So it's this shadow concept of what's in ourselves we usually project on others. We should not comfort ourselves that we are just naturally good. In this knowledge of ourselves, of our country, of our civilization itself, there is scope for what is most need, which is courage, humor, like I started this with, and some charity. So that's from Oppenheimer. Went on in that chapter to explore how he had this realization that he could begin to empathize, which is how Robert Greene in the book talks about, usually to overcome a negative thing, you replace it with a positive thing. Oppenheimer became very empathetic to become sort of this force for overcoming the negative things in the nuclear culture that he brought about. Again, I wanted to mention the levels of this because that's often what is neglected. Now, this is sort of the levels of consciousness. And so every level will have a light and dark side, just like Carl Jung says in Man and His Symbols, how every archetype, and there are many archetypes as there are ideas, but basically every archetype has its beautiful and constructive side and its creative side, but also has the flip side, which is destructive and dark. This is the outer level that we normally see. We call our individual ego that we think of. And this is, by the way, a few images. It's a book by Marie-Louise von Franz, who we learned a little bit about in this conference. She was one of the main protégés to Carl Jung. And you might even put persona sort of after F. So there's like the individual ego layer, the unconscious in the individual. So that would be like your unconscious thoughts from your own memories or your own day-to-day life. Then group or folk consciousness. So it's going to be different if you're in a particular group of people, whether you're in a church or you call yourself a liberal or conservative or libertarian or anything else, you'll start to get a certain consciousness based on the groups that you're in society and on a local level, which local is probably more in this regional consciousness. And then we get into the collective unconsciousness of mankind. And then the unified layer that calls it the unus mundus, sort of that deepest unity of the opposites, or almost like the Tao or the yin yang, as they would probably call it in the West. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about this book, by the way, is how we also learned in this conference, Marie-Louise von Franz was very interested in finding things like the one world theory in her own way, and very close with Wolfgang Pauli, who was also associated with Oppenheimer, by the way. But the idea of finding these levels of and patterns in reality, whether it's on the atomic or subatomic level, that would then manifest not just in nature, but also in psyche. I don't have time to get into all these graphs, but I definitely recommend the book here by Marie-Louise von Franz. But it's all about uniting self and ego and spirit and matter. And like I kind of like mentioned in the little intro, is that we'll often go to one extreme or the other, but we want to unify all these different sides so it actually plays out not just in ideas and thoughts and everything, but into our life. And sometimes that starts through writing and interacting with people, and then it'll give us a path to follow. A little bit from her book, more human beings are tortured and killed in the name of all these isms than die as the result or the force of nature. Behind such isms are the projections of our own inner unrealized opposites. The isms she's talking about, by the way, are all these that she lists a bunch of them here: materialism, communism, socialism, fascism, liberalism, intellectualism, all these things that we can, as Marie-Louise von Franz says, become completely possessed by, because they will come through the group consciousness, which is something that I didn't really mention, but there's like a collective consciousness, which is really another form of unconsciousness. And then that will often give us these possessions by all these group ideas, which are going to seem great, and they might even be great on some level. But the problem is when we get possessed by them, we start doing things that we don't know why we're doing it, rather than taking part in our own lives. And I wanted to try to kind of like bring out some ideas of hope in a way. This quote was not actually from Dostoevsky, but from a Russian poet that said, "The darker the night, the brighter the stars." The reason that's important sometimes is as we go through dark times like we're going through now, or dark times like Carl Jung and Marie-Louise von Franz went through with the world wars and the start of the Cold War, you'll be able to more brightly see the real light, which is, you know, people that want truth and want to do the right thing. Carl Jung said, "No one stands outside humanity's black collective shadow," which is one of the tricky aspects to it, is that we're in it. And like so many things, you know, like being in a period of history, being in a marriage or being in a relationship, when you're in that thing, like even in a conversation, if you look at it afterwards, it's going to look different than while you're in it. So every single one of us is inside of this black collective shadow. And that's sort of this idea of what Jung talked about as the transcendent function, is we need to somehow be able to unite the opposites, which will give us the ability to rise above these things and for a moment maybe see the shadow for what it's worth inside of each of us and inside of the collective to whatever degree. I mentioned this part because it's really important that we don't have fear as we overcome the shadow. We need to have some definitely respect and compassion and care for it. But I think of, you know, there are real hero figures in our history. Like there's some that people might not completely believe in, but there's some that I don't think can be contested. Of course, Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, Socrates, I think are some where they fit that hero archetype, at least in certain instances. And they'll often talk about this idea that, as Gandhi said, fearlessness is the first requisite of spirituality. Crowds can never be moral. I wanted to mention that, and that the crowd is going to quiet out the voice of the individual. This is from Eric Neumann's Origin and History of Consciousness, which is another really important book that I recommend for anybody getting into these kind of things. It's on audio too now, which is great. But he said, "Thus, the great mother is Ouroboric," which is another whole thing of, it's the united of the opposites in their pure nature, but it is terrible, devouring, beneficent, and creative. So it always has this dual nature of destroying and creative at the same time. A helper, but also alluring and destructive. A maddening enchantress, yet the bringer of wisdom. Bastille and divine, voluptuous harlot, and involving virgin immorality and the old eternally young. So that was talking about the great mother, which is sort of the collective. It will have in the collective unconsciousness, which is sort of our deep ancestral pure individuality that we can connect with, that each of us has. It has all the beautiful benefits and creativity. But on the collective consciousness level, where we get into these herd minds and all these isms, as Marie-Louise von Franz pointed out, it can be destructive. But of course, there's good on every level of that, and destruction on every level. The dark does not destroy the light. It defines it. It's our fear of the dark that casts out the joy in the shadows. That's a little quote by Brené Brown. And again, I think that's important to realize that the power is not in the darkness, it's in the light, and it's our courage to overcome it. Quote by Carl Jung, "The shadow is a moral problem that challenges the whole ego personality, for no one can become conscious of the shadow without considerable moral effort. To become conscious of it involves recognizing the darkest aspects of the personality as present and real. This act is the essential condition of any kind of self-knowledge, and it therefore, as a rule, meets with considerable resistance. Indeed, self-knowledge as a psychotherapeutic measure frequently requires much painstaking work extending over a long period of time." Again, that's Carl Jung, and we need to remember that it is a challenging effort, but also not be afraid of it. I bring up this artistic image of David slaying Goliath. And the reason was because this is kind of an old Jewish symbol of a regular person kills this collective giant that everybody had projected on. And then the amazing thing is he's still the same person, but all of a sudden he becomes feared just by overcoming this thing. So I think of that metaphor as an internal thing, is that if we overcome our giants on the inside, people might not see it right away like they would if you slayed a literal giant, but you become courageous and can overcome anything. That's going to come through the path of self-forgiveness and self-compassion, which I had mentioned a bit earlier. The tricky thing is, because overcoming the darkness, can't overcome it with more darkness. Like Lahab and I were recording a podcast a few weeks ago and mentioned the idea that you can't bomb darkness, you can't bomb evil, you can't fight it, but you actually can only overcome it with compassion. And it starts on the level of yourself and the level of those around you. And then ideally then give it an outlet through creativity.
Read that definition, Isaac. That was really good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not sure I got this quote.
That's okay.
I can look this up later, but I almost skipped this quote I had here. Forgiveness is not always easy. At times, it feels more painful than the wound we suffered. To forgive the one that infected it, and yet there is no peace without forgiveness. So it's, again, one of these things that we often forget in the sort of feel-good culture that we find ourselves in. We don't want to do anything that makes anybody feel bad, especially ourselves often. But forgiveness, starting with ourselves, is one of those things where it's painful at first, but it gives that lasting healing. This is an important quote that I talk about a lot. Like one of the things that I often say, even today, is just that it's tricky. It's like this tricky game. It has these tricky levels. There's this archetype figure that Carl Jung often talks about. And this idea goes back thousands of years, which is the figure of the fool or the archetype of the trickster. Carl Jung said, the figure of the trickster, he is the forerunner for the savior. And like him, God, man, and animal at once, he is both subhuman and superhuman, a bestial and divine being whose chief and most alarming characteristic is his unconsciousness. So that's important, because when you decide to overcome things in the world by overcoming yourself, you need to kind of go into it like a foolish journey. And that's how every hero's journey starts off, is really a fool's journey. That's it. I basically wanted to kind of highlight different areas that I've been studying for the last couple of years as I got into this somewhat, since this is almost the end of the conference, try to glue together some of these pieces that are hard to put together in the conference like this, that's talking about the shadow and some of these really tricky aspects. That's it. If you guys have anything else to add before we go on to our next thing.
Thank you, Isaac.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Isaac.
Isaac, hi. We do have a question
from
Elizabeth.
Sure.
She says, beautiful presentation, Isaac, comprehensive and powerful. Which book of von Franz's were you referencing?
It's Projection and Recollection in Jungian Psychology.
Ooh, it's a good book.
I'm really into audiobooks, by the way, and that is available on Audible, which I highly recommend, as well as Eric Neumann's Origins and History of Consciousness, which just came out recently on Audible. Anything else before we go on to the next thing?
I have another question,
sure.
Isaac.
Sure.
So we just wanted to say that we really appreciate you coming in and kind of helping us bring these concepts together. Do you have a recommendation for maybe a more basic book where someone can kind of learn these concepts?
Good question. One thing that I tell people often is the whole tricky thing with understanding archetypal psychology or depth psychology is that it's really deep and it's really complicated. And so you almost don't want that. It's a little bit of a paradox. But the books that I mentioned are probably two of the ones that I would say to get to first, by Neumann and Marie-Louise von Franz. And then another one, like I mentioned, that is, I put the audio reading on my podcast a couple weeks ago, The Undiscovered Self. And I also included the short, comprehensive, like one essay that Carl Jung did specifically on the shadow. It only took like 6 minutes to read, but that's really important. I put that on that as well. And I will say for me that I don't think I would get anywhere with it if I'm just having to like pick up the books and go through it, just because it's like there's a lot of filler and a lot of whatever. So it really helped to get the audio. And also, if you find the YouTube channel, Daily Archetype, as well as my Facebook group and everything, we get into a lot of that, as well as I put a lot of links in my playlist on the YouTube channel of audiobooks and things. And which is one thing I really advise people to sort of answer this question is to try to get into audiobooks as much as you can. And it might be a little tricky at first because it's like an adjustment, but once you get into it, it's really worth it.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds very helpful. I mean, it is complicated stuff. And I like the idea of maybe you don't get a basic book, maybe you jump right in, but then you have like a group of people that you can discuss it with and learn from and kind of help break things down together in a group.
Yeah. Like,
so where can you tell us one last time where people can find more about you and the Daily Archetype?
And that's a good point too, Karen. When I was trying to understand these things, because, you know, I wanted to like really understand on whatever level that I could. And which, by the way, as I've been getting to know Karen a little bit, I told her that I had really loved getting into this because other things that I got into before I would get bored with. Whereas this is like such an infinite thing. It might take a little extra dabbling at first to kind of start to get the concepts, but then you never get bored with it because it's so infinite. But to your question, just find the Daily Archetype Facebook group and podcast are the main things. And then the reason I mentioned that also is because it really helps if you can have conversations with people, and that helps to kind of put out the ideas as you're getting them. And some of the things that I put in that presentation were from Facebook posts that I made, because that has really helped me to try to not just be like, I got it, but then I got it and I put it into like a little Facebook nugget that I can then have discussions with people about. So yeah, the Facebook group, also the YouTube channel and the podcast.
Bringing complex ideas down to earth based on their value, not group identity. This is the Daily Archetype.